two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Religion Today with Martin Tanner, a weekly look at religion and spirituality here at home and around the world. Now, here's your host, Martin Tanner.
Welcome. This is Religion Today. I'm your host, Martin Tanner. Today, part five in our six-part series on the book of Revelation. Today, we start off where we left off, which is just before chapter 10. A couple of remarks about Revelation chapter 9, and that is that this war or series of wars that are mentioned in chapter 9 involve an enormous number of soldiers. These are armed horsemen, as we read in verse 16 of chapter 9. Now, we know that this has got to be some kind of a metaphor because this is a future event because we're in the seventh seal. So it's after World War I, World War II, and people don't ride around and fight wars on horses anymore. So this is some kind of a metaphor. But the number of horsemen, the number of soldiers on horseback involved in this war is enormous. It's 200,000. That's 200 million. Now, the skeptic here is saying, and so John counted them up. How? The answer is he didn't count them up. The last part of the sentence here in verse 16 says that he heard the number of them. So part of John's revelation, part of his vision, was that he actually heard the number of horsemen recounted to him by the angel from whom he's receiving this vision. This is an enormous war or series of wars or metaphor about future wars, because in verse 18 we learn that a third of humans are to be killed in these wars. Then we move on to chapter 10, where we have an angel coming down. This is very heavenly description, rainbow, face like the sun, feet like fire, definitely a heavenly image here. And who does this angel, or what does this angel bring? In verse 2, a little book. And as we read a little further, John eats the book. But more about that in just a second, because we have to stop on our way to John eating the book with a verse that's puzzling to a lot of people. That's verse 6, which says that we are now at a point where there will be time no longer, time no more, in verse 6 of chapter 10. Now, people misread this all the time, and they say, well, God, that means there's a shift, and time on earth is going to be more like it is in heaven, or maybe time is going to have a timeless quality, or that's not really what this means. This is kind of a poor choice, at least for our era, that there will be time no longer. What it really means is you're out of time. It's a little bit like you have 1 hour to take the test or the quiz, and your hour's up. You're out of time. Doesn't mean that somehow there will no longer be hours, minutes, and seconds. It just means the time is up. And so the time is up for what? For the things that were open for humans to do to try to avoid what's coming down the turnpike in the little book that John eats. So now we move on, now that the time's up and the things that are in this little book are going to happen. We read that John eats the book and it's sweet as honey, but then in his stomach, it's very bitter. This isn't too hard to understand. John is enamored with prophecy. It's sweet to him, the idea that God is giving him revelation, and revelation through an angel feels very sweet to him. But as he hears the revelations and as they sink in, they become very bitter to him because of how tragic and how difficult they are. That seems to be the message here. And then chapter 11, which for Latter-day Saints is something that is mentioned briefly in Doctrine and Covenants chapter 77, verse 15. These are two Jewish prophets to the Jews. And so, as much as I love and respect Elder Bruce R. McConkie, his comment that the two prophets that are going to be mentioned in chapter 11 are somehow the first presidency or members of the apostles or something seems less plausible to me, although I certainly don't know for sure. But chapter 11 talks about two prophets who are two witnesses for God. They prophesy in Jerusalem for a long time, 1,260 days. That's 3.5 years, which we'll see is very significant in today's show. These are two olive trees, it said in verse 4, so that signifies they're close to God, two candlesticks, and they have the ability in verse 6, these two future Jewish prophets who are in Jerusalem, to prophesy and to shut up the heavens so that it doesn't rain for 3.5 years, which causes huge problems, and they have plagues and blood and problems and wars, and so people are angry at these prophets in the future, and they kill them. Verse 7 says, the beast and those that follow him make war against them, meaning the two prophets, and they overcome them and kill them. Verse 8, it's a fascinating verse, their dead bodies lie in the streets of Jerusalem for 3.5 days. So they prophesy for 3.5 years. Their bodies are dead 3.5 days. 3.5, big number. And they're not put in graves. They just lie in the streets. And in verse 10, everybody's happy in the rest of the world. They think this is wonderful. The two prophets that tormented the earth are gone. How wonderful could that be, says the rest of the world. But at the end of those 3.5 days, in verse 11, the Spirit of God goes, the Spirit of life from God goes back into the prophets, and they rise up. They are alive again. And then fear comes upon everybody. Now, a comment should be made here. At the time Revelation was written, nobody around the world could possibly know about something quickly enough for people to know that prophets had been killed, and then they'd come back to life 3.5 days later. This is a clear reference to the future. This is possible today with television, with radio, with smartphones, with other current technology, but it was not possible in the days that this very book was written. To me, that's fascinating. After these two prophets are raised back to life, what happens is they are in heaven, and then there's a big earthquake in verse 13. and then the second was gone, and then you have the seventh angel in verse 15, and you have great turmoil on the earth. And then we go to chapter 12. Chapter 12 has three different major parts in it. It has the description of Mary giving birth to Jesus, of the minions of the devil who follow him, the third of the hosts of heaven who followed him being cast out into the earth, and then about them, that is the mother and child, being in Egypt for 3.5 years. All right, when we come back, more of Religion Today, the Book of Revelation. I'm Martin Tanner.
Religion Today with Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. This is the fifth out of a six-part series on the Book of Revelation. We will finish next time. And if you have a question or comment about this or any other program, feel free to send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com. I'll be happy to respond. I'd also like to mention briefly again that I'll be conducting a tour, a Book of Mormon lands tour for Cruise Lady. This will be in April of 2020, April of next year. This cruise will depart from Florida, go through the Panama Canal, come up the coast, and end in Los Angeles. The price for such a cruise is very low. It's a Princess cruise, so it's very high quality. We'll be stopping in Colombia. We'll see, of course, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, southern Mexico. And then while we're on ship, in addition to the beautiful things we'll see, we'll have a chance to discuss, and you'll be able to see videos, presentations that are going to be on all kinds of wonderful things. As a matter of fact, you'll be able to choose. So I think it'll be a wonderful time. I hope you'll be in touch with me for details if you're considering it, or in touch with Cruise Lady, simply the best in Latter-day Saint cruises, at cruiselady.com. You can give them a call and they'll just provide information to you and let you decide, lay out the facts and let you decide. Wonderful, wonderful group of people. It's a privilege and a pleasure to be associated with them. Chapter 12 of Revelation. Mary has the baby Jesus, and then the dragon in verse 3, and the third of the hosts of heaven that are tossed out are after the child. And in verse 6, it says, the woman fled into the wilderness, which is described in the New Testament as Egypt, that they should be there. How long do you guess? What do you think? 3.5 years, you guessed it. 1,260 days. And then it shifts again, and there's a war in heaven, and Michael fights against the angels. The devil and his angels are cast out into the earth. Fascinating chapter that moves us back earlier in time, after being later in time. Then we get to chapter 13, which we're going to go through in detail, but somewhat quickly. Here we have the beast that comes out of the sea first, and then another beast, which comes out of the earth in verse 11. And these two beasts are under the influence of the devil. And they are not beasts that cause war so much as these are spiritual counterfeits. Verse 4 talks about causing people to worship the beast. The dragon does this. The devil causes people to worship the beast. And verse 7 says that it was given in him power to make war with the saints and to overcome them. So these are very strong, very powerful beasts, the two beasts and the devil. And what happens here is that there's an image of the beast. This sounds a little bit like ancient history in which some emperors and others who ruled other countries had huge images built to them, which were made with state-of-the-art technology of their times, able to speak. Or maybe if you see this as something in the future, maybe this is television or something similar to that. You have a statement by Joseph Smith that these beasts signify wicked kingdoms of the world. And because of that, I see the beast and the mark of the beast as more political in nature. Let me give you some examples. It says here that if you have the mark of the beast, and marks are a great metaphor for being forced or choosing to follow something. Having the mark of God in your foreheads is mentioned in the book of Revelation. Back in ancient Roman times here, people often, if you were a slave, would have the name of your master tattooed in your forehead, or it might say taxes had been paid, something along those lines. So the mark of a beast or the number of the beast, which is something a little bit different than the mark, were things that happened often and would have been readily understood by the people in the time this was being written. This mark of the beast and the number of the beast, the mark would be in someone's forehead, and the number of the beast is mentioned as 666, or in some early manuscripts, 616, and seems clearly to be a reference to Nero. I know there are a lot of different ideas about this, but Nero represents corrupt government, government corrupted at its very, very worst. And if you don't show allegiance to the government, if you didn't during the time of Caesar, you couldn't do anything. You had no financial success. You didn't have any religious ability. Those are the kinds of things that were happening. If you were to morph those ideas into the future to find them today, you might say something like, if you're religious or have certain points of view because of your religion, you may not be able to have a pizza shop or a flower shop or a cake shop, and you might be forced to have certain kinds of insurance or not have certain kinds of insurance. Or if you are a college or a university and you refuse to comply with the mark of the beast, you might not get any of your students eligible for loans, for student loans. Those are the kinds of things that seem to me to be what could be or might be a way to understand the mark of the beast and what it could mean in the context of our world today. So then you have in chapter 14 something that continues on with this idea. And this is 144,000. And here they have God's name, the Father's name, written in their foreheads. So they have the right mark in their foreheads, not the bad one. And then you have, in verse 6, in the midst of heaven, another angel coming forth to preach the gospel. This is, according to Latter-day Saints, the future restored gospel, the time that we now live in. And verse 9 says that the third part followed them with a loud voice, saying, "If any man worship the beast or his image or receive the mark of on his forehead or in his hand, the same shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God." So there are ways out of following the beast, even though they might not be easy. And from there, we come to the idea in verse 14 that the Son of Man is going to be coming in a white cloud, a clear reference to the second coming. And that's where we'll end it for today. Next week, the conclusion of the book of Revelation. Join me then. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.